Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Snow is melted or melting all over the state, and it's time for things to really start greening up. It's also time to start thinking about your lawn. Adam Toms is a turf grass expert and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. He's with me today. Hello, Adam.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And all right, Adam, right now we don't need to really get out and work on the lawn, at least not until the snow is fully melted. But what do we need to be thinking about right now?
Yeah, so right now we're kind of in a waiting pattern. You know, we're well behind. Typically, we start talking about wanting to do things in the yard mid-April, but we're behind this year. I'd say southern Iowa would be mid-April, central Iowa, April 20th at the earliest. So things to think about for the spring would be spring fertilization and providing a little nitrogen source for the plant to get woke up, whether you choose to use an organic source or a synthetic type product. That would be a good thing to apply mid-April for the yard. And then also crabgrass prevention if that's something that you're going to take care of in your yard. You definitely want to do that in the spring as well.
Well, and let's talk about fertilizer options. What are the options?
Yeah, so there's several different types. There's a water-soluble quick-release type product, which is going to be your cheapest, but there's a few concerns with that. Obviously, one of the major ones is the potential for leaching or burn of the turf if you over-apply it. And then there's also slow-release products, and these could be everything from your slow-release coated type urea products to the natural, more organic type fertilizers as well that you could use. And what basically the difference there is that they release their nitrogen over a longer period of time, not all at once. So the positives with that, you don't have a flush of growth all at once from the quick release. And so slow release will release slowly over the spring. So that might be a little bit easier on you for mowing.
All right. And of course, a lot of people are very concerned about runoff with fertilizer. What are your cautions? How can you do this responsibly?
Sure. Responsible nitrogen management is always important. And so obviously, we typically say never apply more than 3/4 of a pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet to your yard. So make sure you calibrate your fertilizer spreader first. And there's several publications out there on how to do that. And then also look at when you're done, making sure you get that fertilizer off of the hard surfaces. So, make sure to sweep it back into the yard if you've thrown some out into your sidewalks or driveway. Get that off and back into the grass where it belongs, where it can be taken up. Once that fertilizer product is in the turf itself, it's not going to run off. It's going to run down in. So that's where it should be. So make sure to clean up after yourself.
All right, so that's something to do mid-April. You mentioned crabgrass prevention. What kind of products are we talking about there?
Yeah, crabgrass prevention, there's all kinds of different products out there. You're just going to want to go to wherever you feel comfortable going to the store to get and just read and make sure it says crabgrass prevention products there. Those are all kinds of herbicides for that are available. The key with crabgrass is it's an annual grass, so you want to apply the crabgrass preventer before it germinates. And that'll germinate once soil temps are above 55 degrees for 3 days and 3 nights. So we're a long way away from that right now. We're in the 40s.
So. All right. So something to wait for this year.
Yep.
And you need to get pretty close to that temperature time. You said you want it to happen before that, but how close do you need to be?
The closer you get, the key there is that the longer it'll last throughout the spring and summer. So that's why we're saying April 15th at the earliest in Iowa, especially southern Iowa, April 20th in central Iowa, and then northern Iowa would be 1st of May probably would be plenty safe on that.
All right. Well, I think we get to wait a little extra time before we start mowing this year, which I think is great. But when do we start mowing? How do we know it's time?
Right. So that's the other thing. Mowing's big in the spring. The plants have a flush of hormones that's telling it to grow like crazy, so you're going to mow like crazy. And so what we like to say with mowing is, once the grass is greened up and gets to like 3.5-4 inches, then mow it back down to 3 inches, and that'll be your trigger there is If the grass is green, and then if it started to grow above 3.5 to 4 inches, then mow it back down to 3.
Okay. Now, a lot of us who don't like mowing think, hey, maybe if we mow it a little shorter, then we don't have to mow as often. This is not recommended, though, right?
No, this is not recommended. This produces unnecessary stress on the plant, and we don't want to do that. So we definitely want to keep it at 3 inches at the lowest. So,
all right. How about aeration? Is that something we need to think about in the spring?
Aeration, you know, if you have a bad yard or a yard that has a lot of traffic, go ahead and think about it and go ahead and aerify. And you can do that, you know, again, mid-April. Timing wise, but typically if your yard's in pretty good shape, we say leave the aerifying for the fall.
Now, speaking of good shape or not good shape, this is also the time of year when a lot of us start to notice the brown spots, the areas in the lawn that don't come back. What do we need to do about that in the spring?
Sure. So first and foremost would be keep in mind if you decide you want to seed your yard in those brown spots, don't put out a pre-emerge herbicide in those areas. That'll prevent the grass from germinating, and so that's probably the number one thing that goes wrong. If you have brown spots that you're going to reseed and you don't put out the pre-emerge in those areas, then go ahead and rake up all the dead tissue and then plant your seed and then put, you know, just an eighth of an inch of soil, maybe a quarter inch at most on top of that just to kind of have good seed-to-soil contact, and then make sure to keep it damp. That's typically not a problem in the spring. And again, you don't want to seed until the soil temps are warmer as well. So we're kind of talking today about waiting. So that's kind of the theme.
Playing the waiting game.
Yeah.
All right. And now spring is not the best time to seed, though, right? I mean, if you're thinking about trying to do a major seeding project, that's something to really wait on.
Right. Yeah. Spring is not the best time. We always say September and next September for seeding. Because you're going to fight all of the weeds that are out there. They all want to germinate in the spring, grow throughout the summer. So you're fighting that. You're also fighting diseases, all the other problems with turf that happen in the spring, summer months. So best if you wait for a large-scale renovation till the fall.
All right. Well, we have a question already, and this relates to some of my questions, so I'll go ahead and read it. This is from Linda in Iowa City. She says, I've recently joined the statewide campaign in Iowa called the Good Neighbor Iowa campaign to manage my turf free of pesticides. That includes herbicides as well. I'm making this lawn care change to protect water quality, pollinator habitat, and risks to human health. My question is, what tips do you have for turf management without chemicals? Now, we've talked about some of the options already, but any further tips for Linda and others who want to go that direction?
Sure. For those that are going that direction, the first and foremost is follow good cultural practices. So, you know, try to not stress out the turf much. So let it grow. You know, don't mow it below 3 inches, 3.5 inches. Make sure to aerify it at least once a year. You know, typically if you get weeds in your turf, it's because you're mismanaging the turf. And so, perhaps the ground is too compacted, you're mowing too short, you're letting the grass grow up too tall and then scalping it back and overstressing it that way. And then finally, turf grass needs an inch of water a week. And so in the summer months when it's hot and dry, make sure to provide water there as well. Honestly, you would use very few pesticides at all if you're managing it following those good cultural practices.
All right. And there are options if you already have weeds in your yard and you don't want to have weeds in your yard. I realize that people have different standards for what they want their lawns to look like when they think about the kind of interventions they can do, too. But let's talk about corn gluten meal, because that's an intervention that is completely easy on the environment, but can take care of some of those crabgrass problems, right?
Yeah, corn gluten meal is a great product. Works as a pre-emergent herbicide, and then it's also got nitrogen in it. So for people that aren't familiar with corn gluten meal, it's a byproduct of corn milling. It's in a lot of food products, and so, you know, it's very safe for humans, not a concern there. And so that is an application that you would want to put down mid-April as well. And that would be a fertilizer as well as a pre-emerge herbicide in one, again. So,
for people who live in neighborhoods and they don't want to use chemical control, let's talk about some good neighbor practices. I mean, you said good cultural practices. I mean, when your dandelions come up and you don't mind dandelions, you may have neighbors who really, really don't want dandelions in their yard. So what can you do to be a good neighbor but not treat the lawn the way that you don't want to treat it?
Right. So just to use an example, a crabgrass plant has a million seeds it produces. So the best thing to do there would be get ahead of it right away and hand pull it. That's the safest thing. It's going to be a little bit more work on your end, but that's one of the respectful things you can do. That's the best way to remove weeds if you want to be a good neighbor to someone else who wants to manage their yard differently than yours. And so that's probably the best method.
Do you also recommend people maybe put a little more effort into landscaping if they're not going to manage a lawn in a traditional way to do some more creative things with the lawn?
Sure. I mean, yeah, that's, you know, it's your yard. It's your choice on what you would like to do there for options. And so, yeah, if you are going to minimize that, you know, pollinator habitats, you know, you want to put in some more flowering plants throughout the year, things like that. And so that would be an option as well.
All right. Well, we have the opportunity for you to ask questions of Adam for about your lawn. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we get to the break, let's get this question from Kathy. How do you get rid of nimble will in the yard?
Nimble will is a tough weed. One of the products that's out there now is a product called mesotrione. And it will work. You might have to do a couple applications. So obviously you're going to want to wait till it greens up in the spring, and then you can spray this mesotrione product on it. Just so you know, it's what they call a bleacher herbicide. So it's going to actually knock all the chloroplast out of the plant, turning the plant bright white. So that's how you can tell if it's working.
All right, nimble will's pretty tenacious, huh?
Pretty tenacious. It's so similar to grass in its genetics that it's hard to remove, and so that's. You know, when you're trying to remove something that's very similar selectively, that makes it very hard.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me today, Adam Toms, turf grass expert, assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Also, Richard Duran, Iowa State University horticulture specialist, is here. And we are ready to take your calls about your lawn, but about all of the plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me today, Adam Toms. He is a turf grass expert and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Duran, ISU Extension horticulture specialist. And here's a question from Dave. He says, I have an area in my yard that is overrun with moles. I've heard of using the product Milky Spore on a gardening show as a way to control moles by killing grubs. What are the pros and cons of using this product? I have a grandchild that uses that part of the yard as well as our dog.
Well, to begin with, yes, moles do eat grubs, but the main part of their diet actually is earthworms. So even if you destroy every single grub in the turf areas, you're still going to have the moles. So the best way to get rid of them is by trapping, which unfortunately is not easy. It's difficult. You have to be persistent. So the Milky Spore is not really the solution. It's basically trapping and being very persistent.
All right. Let's get to the phones. Thomas is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, I'm coming from the perspective of a new homeowner. I actually just bought a house last year, and I removed a bunch of trees, like full-size trees, because they were a threat to the house. And then I also removed, five lilac bushes. So I filled in a bunch of loose dirt, and right now my yard looks like a war zone, and I'm just kind of curious how I can bring it back. You know, I don't have a green thumb. I've never done anything like this before, but I just knew that I had to get rid of what I had on my property to essentially protect it and then make it a little more easier for maintenance. So, yeah, any suggestions would be great. Yeah.
Sure. So that's a great situation that you're in, actually, because you get to plant the grass that you want there. So you have two options. One,
you get to start fresh.
Yeah, exactly. Start fresh.
Yeah.
So the first option would be, you know, when it greens up a little bit more, or the weather gets better, you could go to a sod farm and sod it and have instant green. And, you know, in 2 weeks, your sod's rooted and you've solved the problem. The other option is to go out and buy, you know, it sounds like you've went from a shady type yard to probably more of a sun. So you want to get a sun mixture of seed and make sure that, you know, you've said your yard kind of looks like a war zone. So you want to try to level your soil there as much as possible so it's as smooth as possible when you mow it, and then go ahead and spread the seed and just try to rake it in so you've got good seed to soil contact and grow it in over the summer if you need to.
Sir, I was wondering, I actually was on my yard with some heavy equipment as well and kind of put some ruts and whatnot in it, and I was told that I should aerate the lawn and then roll it. Does that sound right to you?
The aerification would definitely be a good thing. You know, if you've got ruts in the yard, what you're going to want to do is probably, I mean, one option, if it's really tore up, is just till that area and just fluff the soil up. You never want to aerate and then roll because you're kind of defeating the purpose of aerification. So that's softening it up and then turning around and rolling, it's packing it right back down. So.
Oh, so it doesn't, oh, okay. I think I was told like it basically loosens the soil. So, because I was kind of looking at it from the standpoint of tamping down those lumps that are in the yard from the tire marks and whatnot. So,
yeah, I just till those areas since you're going to have to reestablish anyway. Just till it, get a good even soil there. That way you don't have like a hard pan buried underneath.
Awesome. Okay, all good advice. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck. You can call us back in your process, Thomas. Thanks a lot.
Maybe next year.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at IPR Talks and email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Henry's up next in Ames. Hi, Henry.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
So my question is just about some of the legal issues surrounding burning of a common yard inside of a town. So my roommates and I found out the hard way that some of the neighbors don't feel too great about it when you do decide to burn your in-town lawn. However, we did notice after doing it that the lawn grew incredibly well wherever we burned it. Do you guys have any suggestions, ways to perhaps be able to continue doing this despite the perhaps the fear of your neighbors?
Well, I am going to guess what you're going to hear here, Henry, but I'll let Richard and Adam say it.
Well, as far as burning, I think that's a city or county type thing. Some cities prohibit that, and so if that's the case, then you can't do it. Now, as far as burning a lawn,
and you can make a pretty quick phone call to find that out.
Right. As far as burning a lawn, there's really not much to burn. Now, typically when we talk about burning, it's native grasses and things like that. And so you want to check with local officials and see when you can do that.
And it is a real risk to burn grass up close to your house.
Absolutely, because if you have tall grass or tall plant debris, it's amazing how quickly it burns. And before you know it, it's out of control. So you don't want to typically do it around the house.
And you can very easily burn your neighbor's lawn as well.
Yes. Or their garage or something else. Yes.
Right. All right. Well, Henry, be very safe. And I hope you come up with a good solution. Let's go to Suzanne in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hi. Yes. This is referring way back to trying to not use poisons on your lawn, et cetera. And Charity, you had talked about, you know, well, what if your neighbors don't really like dandelions and the look of that? So there's a book called Weed Control Without Poisons, and it's by Charles Walters, and I think it's put out by Acres Press. And it talks about, and, you know, there's other sources for this too, but each weed is an indicator of some sort of deficiency or a a pH, you know, they have a preference. They're there for a reason. So for dandelions, I believe that it is a calcium deficiency. And actually, they do bring up calcium from the subsoil because of those deep tap roots that they have. An amendment for that, I think some people have used crushed up eggshells. But anyhow, it's something that you might consider, that not killing the messenger and looking at the messenger and what they have to say, and using some soil science to solve the problem that way.
Well, thanks a lot for your call. Suzanne, Adam, is that something you've heard of?
I mean, those weeds are sometimes an indicator, but dandelions, and all my soil science class I've ever had, have never been because of calcium deficiencies.
It's more typically of a thin turf, where you have maybe some bare spots, and those weed seeds, if they have an opportunity, they germinate and they grow. So again, the main thing is to have a nice, thick, healthy turf and very few opportunities for the weed seeds to germinate.
Suzanne, thanks a lot for your call. Alan's up next in Clarion. Hi, Alan.
Hi. I'm having a real hard time getting rid of Creeping Charlie. I've tried 2,4-D and other herbicides, but it seems like the vine never dies, and it always comes back and smothers out my grass.
It is a very, very tough, resilient plant. It's hard to get rid of. Now, if you had an area that was essentially just ground ivy or Creeping Charlie, if that's the case, where you have very little grass, I would simply destroy the entire area. You can do that by using something like glyphosate or Roundup. You can just till it up or whatever. But if it's basically just ground ivy, there's really no grass to save, and I would just destroy the whole area. In areas where you have ground ivy, but you still have a pretty good stand of grass, then I would try to selectively get rid of the ground ivy. You really can't pull it out or dig it out. You just can't do it. So in that case, what I would do would be to apply a broadleaf herbicide, and I would do that in the fall. Fall applications tend to be more effective than spring applications, and I would do it twice, about 30 days apart. So the first application would be around late September, early October, the second one about a month later, and the most effective compound, I believe, on that is triclopyr, and you can find that in many common garden herbicides. And do that, and you should get pretty good control. The actual herbicide does not directly kill it in many cases, but it does weaken it quite severely, and then it basically winter kills during the winter months. So,
okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tom is on the line next in Dubuque. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a yard that is heavier in clay than you know, good soil. And is there something that can be applied, or can it be aerated to try to improve the soil quality? And number two, if you were to plant a shade tree like a maple, what type of tree grows best in soil that's a little bit more heavy in clay?
All right, great question. So to work on the soil quality, heavy clay, aerify, and then after you aerify, go ahead and get like a good broke-down compost. I'm sure there's one around there. You can top dress that back into those holes that you've aerified. And it'll be a slow process, but you do that several times a year and you're constantly putting that compost into the soil. Basically, what that's going to do is change your soil type, and it should make it a lighter, more positive growing media.
As far as the trees, as far as trees that will tolerate clay soils, the number of trees will do that. For example, the honey locust, lindens typically do quite well. Crab apples do well. Now, the important thing when you plant a tree in a clay-type soil is make sure you don't plant it too deep. And so we suggest when you plant a bald and burlap tree that you dig a hole fairly shallow, a few inches in depth, less than the height of the soil ball, and then place it in the hole so that when you're done, the very top of the soil ball might be 2 or 3 inches above the surrounding terrain to make sure you don't get it too deep. And that's what you want to do, because in a clay soil, if you plant too deeply, that's not a good thing. And also, don't amend the soil when you backfill. Just go ahead, remove the soil, and then backfill with the same soil. Don't add organic matter like compost or peat, because that acts like a sink where the water may just go into that area and then just stay there because it's surrounded by clay. So don't do that.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
All
okay,
right.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Next up, let's go to Megan in Des Moines. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
So, I have a small backyard and a greyhound, and it's impossible. This is my first spring at this house. I just bought it. And the yard is just getting torn up. There's so much mud. The grass was spotty to begin with, it looks like, but I have a very small backyard, and I was wondering if there's a suitable replacement for grass that could be dog-friendly. A neighbor has wood chips in her yard, but I was just wondering what options I have.
I think it's going to have to be wood chips because I don't think any plant material is going to withstand that traffic. So it's not going to be grass. It's not going to be a perennial. They just won't withstand that traffic. And on the other hand, I would hate to have mud. So I would probably prefer wood chip, shredded bark. You could use rock, but I would probably prefer wood chips or shredded bark.
All right, Megan, a problem a lot of dog owners struggle with there. 866-780-9100. Bill is on the line from Avoca next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Avoca.
Avoca, sorry about that.
I'm calling about oak trees. I have quite a collection of oak trees. It's anywhere from 10 years to 30 years old. All of them I've planted. And this spring, I was out doing some trimming earlier, and I had an awful lot of them that on the south side of the tree, on the bark, from about 8 feet down, they're like split. You can do the bark is split straight down to the ground. You ever seen something like this?
Well, it's something that does occur occasionally on trees. It's probably weather-related. For example, in the wintertime, when you have these bitterly cold temperatures, everything kind of contracts, and sometimes things will crack on the bark. So that will sometimes happen. Now, if it's just the bark itself, it's not a good thing, but it's not terrible in that it should be able to kind of grow back over that area. If the crack extends into the wood, that's far more serious because that affects the structural strength of the actual trunk. But if it's just a bark thing, not terrible. It's not a good thing, but it's not terrible. And it should kind of recover from that eventually. I would watch it. The worst thing would be in maybe 2 or 3 years, a piece of bark come off. That would be a far more serious problem. Hopefully that's not the case.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for your call. And let's sneak in one more call before we get to the break. Deb is on the line in Atlantic. Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have a terrible problem with moles or voles in our yard, and I'm just wondering what's the best way to try to get rid of them.
Well, they're different. A vole basically is a mouse-like creature. And they're typically not a major problem in lawns. If they are, the damage typically occurs in the winter months. That's when they're most active, and they'll kind of feed on the grass. And so you may see these little runs where the grass has been chewed off down to the ground. That's typically a vole. The grass typically will recover pretty well by itself. And during the growing season, the voles typically hide in other places, and they're not a problem typically. So they're a major problem.
Okay.
If they are a problem, it's basically in the winter months. And usually the damage is not that serious to the turf. As far as the mole, they're in the ground, and they lift the ground up when they dig these shallow tunnels or runs. And so the best way to deal with them is by trapping, which is effective. It's just rather difficult. You have to be persistent.
Okay. Well, our problem, I think, is that our backyard joins up with a lot of other backyards, and so I think they move from one yard to the other pretty easily, and so I'm wondering if we're just kind of sharing them once in a while. So how about the repellents that you spray on and stuff? Do you think they're very effective?
No. They're not.
No.
Sorry.
They're not. Okay.
A little bit of a fairy tale, right?
Don't waste my money on those then.
No. You'll see a number of products that people try because they get so frustrated, they'll try anything, and some of these products kind of prey on that frustration.
Well, Deb, good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. And here's a quick question from Earl. He says, would leaving acorns and hickory nuts in their holes on a lawn cause damage to the lawn?
Not really, but it's just kind of the debris issue. If it's too much, it may kind of hinder the grass somewhat.
All right, but not necessarily a real problem.
No.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Adam Toms is a turf grass expert and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. They are here to take your calls, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking a lot about your lawn this hour. Of course, we'll answer questions about any of the plants in your life. With me, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Adam Toms, a turf grass expert and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. You can email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Let's get through some email questions here. This one's from Lori. She says, over the past few years, little caterpillars have defoliated large areas of my hardy azalea shrubs early in the season. It seems to reduce the vigor of the plant. I hesitate to treat because of the birds, but will the azaleas eventually succumb? It's puzzling because I've had these types of azaleas off and on for many pest-free decades.
It sawns like the azalea sawfly, which I also have. It's the actual larvae are these little green worms, and they actually feed on the foliage from the very edge of the leaf. And if there are quite a few there, they can actually defoliate the plant, and that can be fairly serious for the plant. So I have been treating mine just because if they defoliate that plant, it's going to reduce the vigor of that plant quite a bit. So you may have to use an insecticide in the spring of the year.
All right. She also wants to know, she has a 30-year-old canister of Bordeaux mix, and she's wondering if that's too toxic to toss in the trash.
No, I would dispose of that. Contact local officials as far as disposal of hazardous waste products and see where you can bring that.
All right. And during the spring, often a lot of communities have cleanup days where mm-hmm. you can take whatever you have hiding in your garage or shed. Here's a question from Linda. She says, what's the advantage of hiring a lawn care company who comes in and applies fertilizers throughout the year versus buying the four-step plan of fertilizer?
So there's a couple advantages.
They do the work.
They do the
one,
work,
right?
Yep. And, you know, they've calibrated their fertilizer spreaders so they know the proper amount to put out, or they know that they're putting out the right amount over the right area. Also, they've been certified to handle the fertilizers and any kind of pesticides that are there. So they'll know, you know, what's the right amount to put in the tank, things like that. They are tested for that. So those are the big advantages there.
All right. Here is a question from Grant and Carrie. Can your guests discuss control measures for Japanese beetles and their grubs?
Well, the thing with that.
We can discuss it.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, the thing with that, with the Japanese beetles, as far as a homeowner, they really can't do anything to effectively reduce the population of the beetles. They can't because they come in from all these adjacent areas. So even if you treated your own lawn, it's not going to affect the population of Japanese beetles the following year. It's not going to do it because they fly in from adjacent areas. They basically are coming from grassy areas, the neighbors, roadside ditches, parks, other areas where they have grass. And those areas are typically not treated. So if you do it, you really don't see a population decrease. And so it's kind of frustrating, but you really can't do much to reduce the population. The Japanese beetles populations do vary from year to year. And some years are quite numerous, like they were last year. Other years, maybe not so much. The weather has a big impact on how well they do, but there's not much humans can do to reduce the population.
All right. Here's a question from Roy and Rolf. We have a terribly bumpy lawn. What can be done?
Sure. That's always annoying when you're mowing the yard. So the best thing to do for that would be aerify the yard and top dress it. Put a little light compost so that and drag it in so that the low spots start to slowly get filled in. And the high spots, you know, with aerification will start to slowly level off so it'll be smooth over time. It won't be a quick fix, but over time you'll get it smoothed out.
All right, here is Mary on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. Yes, I have these old-fashioned climbing roses along my fence, and they got thorns on them, and they grow super long. Can I trim those back? Should I do it now before the blooms or wait till after the blooms?
Well, if you really need to do some pruning, I would probably do it sometime in the next week or two before they bloom. Now, obviously, if you do that, it's going to reduce the bloom later on in the spring and summer, but if you really need to do quite a bit of pruning, I would do it fairly soon.
Okay. Then second question, while I was sitting here, what kind of oak trees have the acorns? I got some white swamp oak, and I have a red oak and a bur oak. None of them have acorns. What kind am I supposed to be getting to get the acorns for the squirrels?
Well, now when you plant an oak tree, they have to grow and mature before they're able to produce acorns. So it may be 15 years, it might be 20 years, but it kind of depends upon the tree species. So when you plant a tree, they have to grow and mature before they're capable of producing acorns. So there may be quite some time there before they start to produce those.
Okay.
But they will.
Okay. I bet the ones that I planted are only 10 to 12 years old.
They're getting close, but not quite there yet.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Mary. Next up, let's go to another Mary, this one in Fairfield. Hi, Mary.
Yes, in my backyard, I've gotten rid of most of my grass, and I want to put in creeping thyme. It's only 2 inches or 3 inches tall, and I wanted to know how to compare the different varieties of this creeping thyme. I like the ones with the lemon oil glands that smell when you walk on them. And how to put it in, how to keep it going, when to put it in?
Well, I would try to put it in spring. I think it may be kind of hard to maintain year from year, but I'd probably try putting it in the ground around mid to late April, early May. And I would try to keep off the area as best I could as far as traffic-wise and realize that if we have extremely brutal winters, it may kind of winter kill in certain areas.
Okay.
Yeah, those pictures.
And what about the different varieties?
I'm not familiar with the different varieties of that, no.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck, Mary. Those pictures of magic carpet thyme are really alluring.
But
so.
It's hard to maintain that nice look. It is.
All right. Well, good luck, Mary. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, we've got John in Grinnell. Hi, John. Oh, I think we've lost John. All right. Let's go to Steve in Mason City. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Thanks. I've got a woodland perennial bed nestled underneath mature oak canopy, and I've got a plant that comes up each year that I just can't seem to identify. The plant consists of a single stem that grows long enough over the summer to begin to arc over toward the ground. The leaves are similar to aspen tree leaves, but maybe a bit larger. And the tip of the plant can send out shoots that will wrap around a nearby support plant, maybe to keep it up and from collapsing to the ground, perhaps. Toward midsummer, 2 to 3 lateral stems will grow off the main stem, and they produce berry clusters, initially green, but they turn blue in the late summer. And the berries form a sphere around the end of these lateral stems, you know, similar in shape to a puff of dandelion seeds around the top of a dandelion stem. Any hints on what this plant might be?
Not offhand. I think I would have to see some maybe photos of this plant when it's actually blooming or producing these fruit. I just can't think offhand what that would be. It doesn't really fit. Certain things came to mind, but then you mentioned something else, and that was not it. So
Right. Yeah, I've looked online. I've looked in horticulture books. I just can't find anything similar.
Okay. So later on this year, when it pops up again and starts to flower and produce fruit, take a few of those photos of the plant and send those down to Iowa State. You can send those to Hortline, H-O-R-T-L-I-N-E, Hortline at iastate.edu. So Hortline at iastate.edu. Try to include photos of the foliage, the flowers, and the fruit. I'm sure we can identify the plant.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Steve. Next, Nick in Des Moines. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks for taking my call this morning. Question here. I've got about 6 oak trees in my yard here, big ones. And we've got the sucker branches that were out last summer, and I never trimmed them. I didn't want to stress the plant during the hot summer. Never got out there this winter to do it. Do I still have time to clip those off? I mean, each tree has them.
Okay.
I didn't know if you have to do that before things start to bud on those stems.
Yeah, we typically suggest pruning basically in December, January, and February. And you typically do not want to prune between April and fall. And that's because of the concern for oak wilt. So at this point, because of the cold weather, I think the risk is small, but it's still there. So if you wanted to prune now, I would immediately paint the pruning surfaces with a latex house paint.
Okay.
That would prevent the insects from being attracted to the pruning cut. So you want to do that within like 15, 20 minutes of making that pruning cut. Just paint that surface with a latex house paint.
Okay.
And prune as soon as you can.
All right. And then one other quick question here. During our along our fence line, I've got a Dutch elm, and my neighbor had a larger one, boy, way bigger than mine, but it got elm disease, I believe, last summer, so they cut it down, and now mine that was next to hers is dead. Is that a way to, can that tree spread into the oak trees? That's the only elm I have. All
no.
The other trees are oak. I didn't know if it could do anything with touching branches.
Dutch elm disease is very specific for elms, mainly the American elm. So in the 60s and 70s, Dutch elm disease was wiping out the American elms. But a few American elms did survive, and so we're still seeing occasionally some trees die because that disease is still present in the state, always will be. As far as Dutch elm disease, it only affects elms. It's not going to affect the oaks.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Nick. Next up, Matt in Prairie du Chien. Hi, Matt. I think we've lost Matt, but don't worry. We have a bunch of email questions to get through. Here is one from Darren in Rock Island. He said, I had a large 12-inch trunk maple die, which is in front of my home. All the homes have 2 trees in front. I need to replace and have it trimmed down to an 8-foot stump. My neighbor advised me to trim the stump to 2 to 4 inches high, as low as possible. Use an auger or drill to hollow out 4 to 8 inches in the center of the stump and about 1 to 2 feet down, and plant a new tree inside the stump.
No.
All right. He said,
no.
He said, on the great idea to crazy scale, where does this land?
It's crazy.
Totally crazy. All right. Here's an email from, that was a good distinct answer. Well done, Richard. All right. Here's a question from Kevin. He says, I used corn gluten meal last spring for crabgrass prevention per your recommendations, and I found it highly effective. Thank you. And it really wasn't any more expensive than using traditional chemical application. I don't recall the setting I used. So can you give us the pound per square foot ratio again? Is it also effective for broadleaf weeds? And is it possible to put too much on burning your grass?
So the recommended rate is 20 pounds of corn gluten meal per 1,000 square feet. And remember, it has to have the high amount of protein in it. So as far as his setting goes, you know, he's going to have to calibrate that because every spreader is different. Is it effective on broadleaves? Yes, over time. It's going to take a long amount of time. Basically, what happens is it strengthens the turf stand. This turf outcompetes the broadleaves. So, yes, it does work against broadleaves. It may take 5-10 years before you really see that you've made a huge difference, but it does work that way. And then, you know, can you put down too much? Absolutely. That's the reason why you're given the setting that you are with 20 pounds per 1,000. That will tell you that's kind of the perfect rate there. Anything above that could cause problems, just like anything.
All right, and Tammy in Solon has a question about corn gluten meal. She says, are there different kinds of corn gluten meal? Can I use any kind on my yard?
Yeah, so corn gluten meal, you have to make sure that you get, you know, with the high amount of protein in it. That's the ones that's been tested to work. Periodically, you'll hear people say things like, oh, I could put cornflakes on my yard. That doesn't work.
that would be a more expensive option as
that
well.
That would be a much more expensive option. So, yes, you know, make sure it's got the highest amount of corn protein that you can in that.
All right. Here's a question from Angelica in Des Moines. I'm looking for suggestions for a hardy, no-mow ground cover to replace the grass in my small backyard. It should be able to withstand children playing on it. Bonus points if it's native and low maintenance. That's the silver bullet right there, Adam.
All right. So I'm not going to have a great solution there because many weeds, many ground covers don't handle traffic as well as turf. That's why turf's around in most yards. As far as native grasses go, if I forget where they are in the state, but they could potentially try buffalo grass. That would be native to Iowa. Be forewarned that it's only going to be green a couple months out of the year, but they shouldn't have to mow that. It's a very low-maintenance grass. Otherwise, I would go and look at – there's new varieties out there. If they go and check around at different stores, there's what they call low-mow grasses or limited mow, and they don't have to mow those as often.
All right. Here's a question from Jerry. If I cut 4-inch grass back to 3 inches, how often will I have to mow?
Yeah, so that's
a lot.
4-inch grass back to 3 inches is, you know, going to be fairly often depending on the weather conditions. But if he was mowing 3-inch grass back to 2 inches, he's going to have to mow even more. So so there's a positive there on that. And you're going to mow more in the spring than the middle of the summer when it's hot and dry. So it's really dependent on weather conditions.
All right. And we've had a lot of questions about bumpy lawns today. So we'll end with yet another one. This one's from Patty. She says, my lawn is uneven and has divots. Can I just rake a load of dirt across it to even it out?
Yeah, you could rake dirt into the yard and try to smooth it. You might need to add seed if you're going to kind of smother out some of the high points, though.
Okay. And she also asked what the best grass seed is with Full Sun and a dog.
Full Sun, Kentucky bluegrass, ryegrass mix, and make sure to walk the dog.
All right. Adam, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Adam Toms, turfgrass expert, good dog advice too, assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist, and we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.